Fred and Jeff and John are the three horsemen. They never get along, they're the three horsemen. They argue about science fiction and fantasy. Fred and Jeff and John are the three horsemen. Ride, horsemen, ride!
Good evening, or morning, or afternoon, and welcome to the Three Horsemen Podcast. I am John Stevens, and I am one of the Three Horsemen. And with me is Fred Kish, another horseman.
Hi, this is Fred Kish, and I am lounging about in sweats, a sweatshirt, and a Tag-On's Truff t-shirt. How are you all doing?
And also with us is, of course, the other horseman, Jeff Patterson.
Hey, how you doing? Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter. I blog far too infrequently at baddaystudio.com. The blog is Gravity Lens. And I occasionally have things for SF Signal. I have not had much up lately. Been a little busy. But hello.
And Fred, you didn't do your spiel.
Well, I thought I'd take a different tack tonight.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize. Uh-oh.
But I can be found. I can be found on Twitter as at Fred Kish, or my blog is Bernal, B-E-R-N-A-L, Alpha. And I've been trying to be a little more active there recently, and actually broke 600 unique page views a couple times last week.
Ooh.
Ooh. Big time. That makes you the big man around here, Fred.
Yeah, right.
And I will chip in since I am the third horseman, and I am on Twitter as Erudite Ogre. I also have a Tumblr, Erudite Ogre, which is getting updated enough, and I also have a blog, jhstevens@wordpress.com, that is also not updated enough. So, like Jeff, I've had a lot going on, but I am committed, I tell you, to 2015 being the year I do more stuff. So I will also add all the mea culpas and then promise to do better. So tonight we're just going to have a quiet little show. We're going to hear from Jeff about his experiences at World Fantasy Convention. And then we're going to discuss all of the things we have read, viewed, heard, and otherwise consumed over the course of the past few weeks. So, Jeff, you want to tell us about World Fantasy?
Well, yes, I would love to.
Excellent. That goes along with our plans,
it's
then.
It's close to a month ago now, and yeah, it was quite spectacular. I arrived on, it was local for me, it was about a half an hour drive, so I went on Thursday.
Where was it this year, Jeff?
Huh?
For our listeners, where was it this year, who don't
it
know?
It was in officially D.C., it was actually in Arlington. Right across the river from D.C. And I arrived festooned in my Three Horsemen t-shirt, which I made the day before. broke out my iron for the first time ever since I've been down here. And I had a great time. I was there Thursday night, pretty late into the night, hung with Jamie Tad Rubin and Bud Sparhawk and several other folks. And was back on Saturday, and I got to meet, Django Wexler and Richard Sheely and Leah Peterson. Ran up with our previous guest, Jonathan Strawn. I met up with him on Thursday as well, spoke with him for a bit. Tim Markwitz, the editor, met Sean Duke at the end of Saturday. He got to listen to me rant far too long regarding the generation gap in fandom. Sean put up with an old man's ranting, but we had a grand time. He introduced me to a lot of nice folks too. Jamie introduced me to Jen Brissett, whose book Elysium is out beginning of this month, and she was a blast. She kind of scolded us because at one point she said, John DiNardo has a post of mine to put up, and Jamie and I just started laughing, so we took a group selfie. And I tweeted it with, hey, John, Jen wants to know when her post is going up. And she's like, no, I didn't ask that. The convention itself was pretty good. I got to go to the live recording of the Cood Street podcast with Peter Straub and Caitlin Kiernan. The art show, I was not aware this was happening, had a lot of the recently put up for sale or put into commission work by Virgil Finlay.
Ooh.
And it was a lot of stuff I had never seen before. Not that I've only seen reprints. There were quite a few pieces that I had never seen before. And I was a little stunned by some of it, because a lot of it was the actual magazine originals, where the painting goes across the top and or the drawing goes across the top and the side of the board, and it leaves room for text in the middle and stuff like that. And there was a lot of real obscure pieces that were up there that were quite fascinating. The convention was nice enough to give us all thumb drives, which had 5 volumes of a fantasy compilation featuring a lot of people who were at the convention, but it also had a sizable PDF program for the art show as well.
Wow.
And that was really sharp. I probably spent two or three hours staring at that stuff. There was a lot of people who I saw there who I didn't get a chance to talk to. I saw Gail, and I saw John Picaccio during the art show. Got to briefly say hi to Stina. I waved to her as she came in, but she had no idea who I was. But we talked on Thursday night. And Karen Burnham, and she introduced me to a few folks that she was hanging with. But yeah, it was a great time. So I now think the only person who I've podcasted with who I have not met in Meet Space is Paul. I think Paul's the only one. Yeah. So
it's on you, Paul.
Maybe Rob Bedford. I forgot about Rob. That's right. I think Rob too. What was the question, Fred?
I said, it's on you now, Paul.
Yeah, just we got to get him back. We got to get him back to the East Coast. Yeah, there were some really good readings, many very interesting panels. One of the things that kind of made it interesting is that we were sharing the hotel space with the Rolling Thunder Motorcycle Club. Rolling Thunder is a group that does the 9/11 ride through Northern Virginia and many parts of the East Coast, and they have a tendency to close down towns. You know, they closed Leesburg, Virginia here for about 45 minutes while these thousands of bikers came rolling through. Well, they were having their annual convention. I don't know if it's annual or not, but they were having their big national convention in the same hotel as us. And we had a couple common spaces, and it was interesting. As groups go that I've seen convention shared with, that was one of the more interesting ones. I had to remind everybody, I go, these are not cosplayers. These are actual bikers. Do not touch them. But everything was fine. Yeah, it was, I wanted to thank the convention because they did get me a membership about 2 days before it started. I think Tuesday was when I got the invite from the convention. And as it was, I ended up bar conning for far over half of it, which I think most people were. But there were a lot of really good, it was a great panel on military fantasy, use of military tactics and lifestyle in fantasy stories. And Mike Cole was at that, and Django was on that. And that was pretty good. And a few really good readings, and there was a few talks regarding Virgil Finlay that I went to, and all around it was a grand old time, and I really had fun.
Excellent.
And my T-shirt got quite a few comments and compliments. And I got a few books signed. I didn't go crazy. I tried to restrain myself, but much fun.
Excellent.
I'm even more upset now that I got sick.
And everybody was, many people were asking. Jamie especially wants to hang with you. So. Yeah, mm-hmm. We had a good time.
You weren't able to dissuade him?
No. Lord knows.
That's great. Well, cool. So shall we talk about stuff we have seen and heard?
Sure. Of course.
That sound good? We're going to let Fred start because I think he may have the most.
Well, for the year, depending on how late I read tonight, these numbers may change dramatically. Books, I've done 128 books, which is still not as good as certain past guests of ours, but...
You'll never beat her, man. Never.
Yeah.
No one can beat her. She is undefeatable.
Exactly. But short stuff, I've gotten to 837 short works, be they short stories, magazine issues, comic issues, essays, all sorts of stuff. So 837 short things. And as I mentioned to these gentlemen prior, my main computer is fried, so I can't get an exact count, but I am probably at, I'm going to guess, 2,500 hours of audio stuff for the year, which is quite a bit.
Now, you know, one thing I wanted to say, in my recent trip to South Carolina, I rented a car. It was a 2015 Chrysler 200, and it had no CD player in it. And it had a USB jack, and I plugged my thumb drive with all my audiobooks on it, and they were not recognized. So I ended up having to transfer stuff to my MP3 player. But, yeah, these modern cars and their USBs, yeah, they're convenient, but if you don't make them, you know, format agnostic...
Right.
They're useless to people that listen to audiobooks, and it's going to be a deal breaker. So just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, I agree.
Good to know.
We have issues too, all sorts of times. oddly enough, that kind of goes on to my next bit of culture consumed, which is a follow up to one of our first episodes, if not the first episode we talked about. The way we read, whether we read ebooks, paper, etc., audio. And this year I have made a leap from using a Kindle with keyboard because it had issues to using a Samsung Galaxy tablet. And that has changed the way that I read comics, which is another ongoing theme of the show because, as everyone knows, these two gentlemen have gotten me more and more into various comics. So prior to this, I was reading my comics on my cell phone using Comixology, which, well, it worked, but it was kind of tiring because it was one panel at a time.
Right.
And your thumb is sweeping from right to left to advance the page, et cetera, and just, you know, it would take a long time to get through any issue. But now with the tablet, it's a vastly better experience because it's one page at a time and I'm just zipping through all these puppies one by one. The only time problem I found is that if it's a really big, like double page or, you know, like a spread, it doesn't on the tablet, zoom from section to section as it did on the cell phone. So that's the only downside. So sometimes I might lose a little bit of detail. But reading, for example, one comic that Jeff recommended, Caliban, was a completely different experience between reading it on the phone and reading it on the tablet. And I've now reloaded the tablet with all sorts of stuff I read on the phone first just to be able to see all that artwork I was just kind of squinting at. And then other stuff I've been reading. I've been doing a lot of Sherlock Holmes. And I would recommend to people, the links will be in the show notes, the recent annotated edition by Leslie Klinger. And John, I'm sure you're familiar with the earlier annotated Sherlock Holmes, I believe it was Stephen Baron Gold, which was...
I think we have a copy on the shelf at the bookstore, as a matter of fact.
Yes, enormous, at one point a double boxed set, lovely leather or pseudo-leather edition. Klinger was hired by the publisher to do a new version of that, and it has spread into three rather large volumes. I mean, if you want to know what a pound is, and how a pound breaks down, or what a railway table looks like, or what the food that they mention looks like, or, I mean, any one of a million things that you just read in these stories, mm-hmm. and you're like, what the heck is it? This is the place to go. And two of the three volumes are available as ebooks. Unfortunately, the third one, the novels, for some reason hasn't been converted to ebook. Klinger is also the man who is annotating Neil Gaiman's Sandman stories. I think they just did the third volume of that. And he's also done Dracula. And he came out this year, and I'll probably mention it in our upcoming wish list episode, foreshadowing there. He has done a volume on H.P. Lovecraft. So he's a man to go to if you want the backstory.
Oh, that's good.
Yep.
Excellent. Maybe more book. People looking at Lovecraft than just Josie and a couple of others.
Yeah. But, I mean, then I just finished a book called Vacuum Diagrams by Stephen Baxter, which is short stories set in his Zeely universe.
Love that book.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. I mean, you look at the timeline, you're like, you know, it goes from the creation of the universe to essentially the heat death of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, and that's one heck of a scope. In the graphical end of things, I've read, not sure how to, I guess it's called We Three.
We Three, yep.
Yeah, Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly.
Quietly, yep.
Quietly, which was recommended by one of our other SF Signal regulars, Mr. Matthew Sanborn Smith, who emails me about once every 3 months or so to say, hey, you want to try this? And sometimes I read it and I'm like, oh, that's good. And sometimes I read it and I'm like, okay, that looks like it's good, but I'm not sure about it. And this was one of the later ones. I think, I mean, the art is beautiful. I followed the story in general, but it was kind of hard. I couldn't get into the dialogue of the three main characters for some reason. I was just not parsing the abbreviations quickly. So that might have taken away from it. But I definitely will look for more stuff from those two gentlemen. And then I read a David Peterson does this comic called Mouse Guard, which comes out way too infrequently. And I read the volume called Fall 1152. Beautiful artwork. Just think of Game of Thrones done with mice. If you want the elevator pitch. Beautiful artwork. Great stories. Yep. Really, really nice stuff. And then because there's a new volume coming its way to me sometime this month, I started rereading Howard Taylor's Schlock Mercenary series. So I got through the first one, which is called The Tub of Happiness, and I'm now in the second volume. And hopefully I will get through the other 9 odd volumes before the new volume comes. And I get to open it up and see what he sketched for me. And that, believe it or not, nice. since spoilers, we're thinking of having 3 episodes this month. That is all I'm going to reveal at this point.
Okay. That sounds good. All right, Jeff, what about you?
Just to add on to what Fred said, Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly just did an issue. Morrison's handling the Multiversity books for DC right now. And the book that just came out, I believe this past week or the week before, was called Pax Americana. And each of the Multiversity books takes place in a parallel DC universe. but Quietly did the art on that one as well, which has a very interesting, reverse time lapse sequence at the very beginning about a president being assassinated, which I really like. They also did Flex Mentallo together, the Doom Patrol spinoff back in the, I want to say 88, might have been later.
Is it that long ago?
Yeah, it was pretty long ago. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple comics wise, a couple things that have popped up on my radar. Frank Thierry and Cesar Razak are doing a miniseries called Red Sonja, The Black Tower. I'm going to withhold judgment on the book itself until the final issue comes out because I want to see how it ends. But it's interesting because it is effectively Krull done correctly. It's basically if you repurposed the horrible movie Krull as a Red Sonja story so that you actually had a somewhat decent protagonist. This takes place when Sonja is a bit older than most of the comic adaptations that have come out as well. Three issues are out so far. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I would say wait for the trade, but I'll wait till the fourth issue comes out next month. It's been kind of fun, though. It's incorporating some very loose and somewhat cliched science fiction elements into the story that kind of you know take you by surprise when they happen. So, Robbie Morrison just started writing the new Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor series. And the second part of the first two-parter just came out, involving a very fiery monster called the Hyperios, and it was really good. It was as the Doctor Who books that have been coming out lately goes, this one has probably been my favorite so far. It was a nice, tight two-parter, had a really good science fiction villain, had a lot of great characters on this planet that they end up going to. And I do recommend that one. Robbie Morrison and Dave Taylor are doing that. A book that I discovered this book through a mention that I believe Sean Duke brought up on a tweet, a book called Letter 44.
Yes.
By Oni Press, which kind of surprised me because I've been generally unhappy with most Oni Press books. 12 issues are out so far. Effectively, in the opening pages of the first issue, the new president, the day before he gets sworn in, goes into the Oval Office and finds a letter left for him by the last president, who actually took off early. The last president has been roundly criticized for starting wars all over the world. And it turns out the reason he's doing it is that several years ago, something was discovered out in deep space. And scientists have figured out that, yes, they know we're here, and yes, something's obviously going to happen. They're either going to come here or whatever. And he's been basically upping the world in general, the world's military might, so that we'll be able to deal with whatever arrives. The new president is not happy with this particular situation. And then there's a second storyline involving the crew of the ship that's out approaching this anomaly occurring elsewhere in the solar system, and it's a really good ongoing ensemble piece with, you know, an earthly track and a space-based track, and they're both really, really good. I'm up to about issue 7 right now. That's by Charles Sewell, and art is by Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque. Matt Fraction put a new book out this past week called Odyssey, ODY-C, which is effectively a gender-swapped retelling of the Odyssey. And it is also not what I would call very straightforward. The art is by Christian Ward. The art has a somewhat surrealist bent to it. It reminds me a little bit stylistically of what's been going on in the Prophet comic lately, with a little bit of framing and composition that sort of looks like some of the stuff that's been done in Saga. Kind of interesting. It's nice to see another trippy SF book come out that isn't superhero based. And I'm looking forward to see where it's going to go. Kind of also reminded me of George Perez's Sirens, which the first issue of that came out, I think, 2 months ago. It sort of struck me as very similar in that it's an SF / fantasy book that eats up, you know, an amount of time in its narrative and is predominantly female characters. It's going to be tough not to get comparisons between those two books. But wherein Perez's book is basically built from the ground up, this one is clearly, you know, the telling of the Odyssey as a story of a spaceship heading home after a war. So, after our discussion about Laid Baron, in our horror, episode last month, I went back and read a couple of his short story collections, and I just finished last week The Beautiful Thing That Awaits Us All, which is such a good collection. Yeah. From there, I got turned on to John Langan.
Langan.
Yeah, The Wide Carnivorous Sky and Other Stories was a collection that I read. And oh boy, was that good. It was, it struck me as a pissed off Bradbury is what it struck me as, quite frankly. It was, yeah, really good stuff. If I had read his stuff before, and I probably did, I did not remember it. But this collection is really good. The Lucius Shepard, Beautiful Blood, came out recently, which is a revisit to the Dragon Greal stories, like Scale Hunter's Beautiful Daughter and stuff like that. This is a novel-length story about a man who wants to master the market on the dragon's blood and kind of ends up becoming the drug lord of the various cities that are aligned along the dragon's flanks. Yeah, really good. I actually got teared up at some point. He did such a good job writing this book, and I had to keep reminding myself that we're not going to see any more books by him. So
yeah, I got to get my hands on that too.
A bit of a, yeah, that was an unexpected surprise when I found that. Pronunciation, the book I keep hearing about, Sixin Liu, The Three-Body Problem. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the author's name correctly.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know either.
Yeah. two-thirds of the way through that, and my, that's an interesting book. Tells a very, very large and ominous story through a series of smaller viewpoints. I don't even know where to begin describing this thing. There's just main character has to discover exactly what the story is behind all the odd goings on that have been occurring, and each clue that is found is larger by an order of magnitude than the one before it, and I'm dying to finish reading that. One nonfiction book I read was The Invisible History of the Human Race by Christine Keneally, subtitled DNA and Its Role in Human Development. This was picked it up in the midst of doing some research and read through most of it. And it's a very interesting narrative in how genetic traits did and or could have, depending on how you read this particular narrative, impact humans as they migrated around the world and through various cultural, meteorological and other upheavals that they went through. Pretty fascinating stuff. I'm going to go back and read a couple chapters. I was doing it for research and found myself getting drawn in, which is the best way to hit these books. And the one thing on TV I've been watching in the last couple weeks is Strip the Cosmos on the Science Channel, which is another space science show, but this one uses CGI graphics to actually take astronomical bodies apart and show you their various bits and innards and how they work. And it's pretty fascinating. They did one about the sun, which was really cool. But the one they did about asteroids this past week, I really enjoyed, where they talked about the various makeup of things like Ceres and other bodies and what resources they might hold inside them. And it's fascinating basically to see, these bodies being, bisected and pulled apart, and you zoom into the various, parts where different forces are at play, et cetera. The whole bit about magnetic loops and how they occur in and around sunspots is really fascinating. They actually show how the magnetic flux occurs at the core, and then you see it rising up through the actual, sun, the cross section of the sun itself, until it breaks out. Really trippy stuff. I've been enjoying that, as well as the other shows that we've discussed recently. So that's enough for me.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Forgot to mention that we had watched the season of Doctor Who. And I've now gotten my daughter hooked on X-Files.
Really?
Oh, nice. Yes.
Yep.
Wow. It's so good. She should learn about disappointment early, so. Yeah. She should get that out of the way before her heart's broken.
You know? Well, the first time the truth is out there, appears on the screen, I'm like, just you wait, it really isn't.
You will learn there is no truth, child.
Yeah.
Great. So I guess it's my turn now, huh?
Yes.
Well, you know, I was looking over the stuff that I've read the past few weeks, and I don't think there's anything really, really super new here. It's not really old stuff. It's kind of like stuff I was kind of going back to and trying to catch up on a lot of things. But in terms of books, I've read two, neither of which is a novel. Neither one.
Uh-oh.
Unless you count my rereading of Annihilation, which I talked about before, so I'm not going to talk about it again. But, I mean, I reread Annihilation because it was so good. I just go right back and do it again. And I just got the second book, Authority, so that is now in queue. What I did read, I picked up a book that I was sent for review. Oh, man, this is going to be terrible, like a year ago. And I read about half of it, and it just wasn't doing it for me. So I had stopped, but I was having a conversation with someone about different approaches, difficult reading, and things like that. And I thought, well, you know, there are a few books that I really would like to go back and try to really see what I can do with them. So I went back and I finished the book, and it got better. So, and that book is Matt Bialer's Bridge, Long Poems of the Extraordinary. It is put out by Leaky Boot Press. It's put out by a small press. And it's an attempt to take, I guess what you would call, urban legends and make long epic style poems out of them. And what he's trying to do, which I think is great, I mean, I think the idea behind this is fantastic, is to find a voice and a cadence to create sort of American sagas, essentially. Like taking the idea of the epic poem or the saga and applying it to these strange little stories that seem to be so popular with a lot of people like to tell. And, you know, so he takes things like, you know, ufology and things like that and tries to make these sort of epic poems out of them. And where it didn't work for me was in poems where the poetry is sort of subsumed by the need to create a narrative. So you can see him trying to find a voice and a steady rhythm and a style that will sort of make these really sing. But some of the earlier poems especially get so bogged down in sort of prosaic detail that they're not very poetic. So you kind of lose some of the poetry in trying to get the details and the organization. But then, like I said, when I picked it back up, I found a couple of the long, and they are long poems. They're like, you know, 30, 40 page poems in some instances. So he's set himself up a really difficult task. And it's, you know, it's not an easy thing he's trying to do. But like I said, but in the second half of the book, literally the second half of the book, I picked it up and read the first poem, which is a poem called Fireflies, and maybe one of the longest in the book. And that is really good. So when he hits, it's really amazing because it becomes poetic. It's these weird, this is like weird conspiracy theories and stuff that you might often just sort of dismiss out of hand when you hear about it as a sort of a little story from someone. But he's really trying to mine them for both some mythic significance, but also a sort of a psychological exercise in how we try to make stories about the world. Now, some of the stories are really weird. So when it hits, like I said, it's really good, but I sort of still have kind of a mixed feeling about it because some of it doesn't really work for me, but some of it really does. But if you're looking for some adventurous reading, that is a good one to pick up, I think. And then the other book that I read was a short story collection which was one of Ursula K. Le Guin's books. I'm trying to remember which volume I have. The Real and the Unreal, We're on Earth, which is, I think, the first volume. And that is one of my favorite presses, whose names, of course, is now escaping me. Small Beer. I think it's Small Beer, right? And basically, this is the volume where she tries to put together her sort of less fantastical stories. So there are two volumes. Volume one is War on Earth, which is sort of less fantastical stories. And volume two is sort of the one where the fantastical gloves come off, as it were. So I read the first volume, and I think this came out in 2012. So like I said, this one's been out for like a year or two. And it's it's very good, but I don't think I completely understand the stories. I mean, I have yet to see Le Guin really write a bad sentence anywhere, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's like, she can just, in her speech, and the same with her speech, too. It's like, everything is profound and really well-worded and super clear, but very, you know, deep and affecting. I'm like, I don't know how someone can maintain that, but she does it. And so the stories are quite good. And there are things like, she sort of has an alternate history, a sort of alternate, you know, Europe sort of group of stories, and then a couple of very sort of as realist as she can get kind of stories. So what's interesting about them is to see, you know, how much of her work is about the language and not about, you know, fantastical conceits or stuff. You know, it's not about, you know, the wizardry or the magic so much as she's really good at describing things and dialogue and making people interesting to read about. And that's one thing that came through really clear for me in this book. But on the other hand, there are a few stories, particularly the first story in the volume, where you read it, and it's really interesting. You're reading and reading and reading, and it's interesting, and it's so well done, and you're like going, I can't believe, you know, I'll never write like this. And you get to the end, and you're like, wait a minute, what was that really about? I'm not sure. And I have a feeling that's probably intentional. But you kind of look back at it like, okay, and then you look back at the sort of the things that are talked about and how things were like, well, and there's not really much going on. And there's not, I mean, it's like, it's so strange. You can become so absorbed in stories, and there's not a lot of, you know, action, or, but they're really interesting and they're really engaging. So I liked it very much, even if I don't really understand some of the things that, like, you know, I'm still pulling apart the import, and I want to go back to a few of the stories and reread them and think about them a little more. But that was a really interesting experience, and I really want to get the second volume, which, if I remember from the TOC, has more stories that I know. I mean, one of the other great things about this was that a lot of these were stories I had never read before of hers. So it was a real treat to sort of see the sort of material that's sort of less well known. So I highly recommend that. And then for comics, I did a sort of epic read of the entire Gail Simone run of Batgirl. Except I forgot to read the annuals. And that was 34 issues, so that's a decent run.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot too. First volume was kind of finding its, like, some of the stories were just finding its footing. And the middle was a little flabby in terms of story. And the ending is really interesting because she, as I read the story, she sort of had to get to a point where she's making a clean break to make way for the next writer who's taking a very different approach to Barbara Gordon than she did. If you've seen, some of the art that's circling around from the new series, and the writer and artist for that are really sort of changing it, and they're making it somewhat lighter, quirkier. So it's a very different approach. So she had to make a sort of a clean break, to sort of level the ground for the next incarnation. And I had heard before I read this that it's, you know, it's tragic and it's dark and, like, it is all that. But the really funny thing that I found in it was, and it's remarkable, is that there's a surprising amount of humanity in it, too. Much more than I had expected, much more than I've seen a lot of other comics, actually. Relationships and her internal thought processes and the things that she goes through are, in some sense, more sort of quote-unquote realistic. But I don't think Simone's trying to write something that's, you know, super realist. She wants to get to different things about the characters and their situations than you've seen a lot of other comics. There's plenty of action, and there's plenty of, you know, detecting and all kinds of superhero-y stuff, but I was quite taken with the way the characters were done, sort of good guys and bad guys. There's certainly some flattening of characters that pops up because it's comic books and it's hard to write a lot of characters at the same level. But it was quite good, and I like the way also that stories weren't super compacted. Like the story that takes place in the first, I think, three, or is it four issues? Is really kind of a short story in terms of what happens. But she lets it play out, and she gives the characters time, and she gives the reader time to really feel more of what's going on. Just flip from page to page and read the book in like 5 minutes. So it's a really, it's a book you really read. And the art, for the most part, is quite good, too. So I was one of the better comics I think I've read in a while.
One thing about that book, and I don't think I read all of them. I think I've still got a few more to go.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, and I love Gail Simone. I've loved her since, you know, mm-hmm. the early stuff of hers that I read. What always struck me, though, is that the editors at DC, especially in the wake of the New 52, have really tried to push for story arcs to be written for trades, which has been a reality.
Oh, that's interesting.
Where every story has to be 4 issues long or 6 issues long, whatever. She comes up with such a great variety of stories.
Mm-hmm.
That to try to uniform them in that way, I think, is sometimes difficult. And as a result, I think you will occasionally get the walk-on character who's a touch flat or really doesn't seem to have purpose, or
mm-hmm.
get the lack of compression, for better or worse, depending on what's going on. Because
right.
remember, there was one story in that run that I thought felt a tiny bit rushed, wherein... I think it was the second one I felt was rushed, wherein, like you said, that first one is so nicely, you know, laid out and so utterly readable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It totally is.
Suddenly you end up getting the sensation of you're shifting into, you're suddenly shifting into a new velocity, a new gear. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. like when Geoff Johns took over Avengers or whoever it was. When they did Avengers Dissembled, going from the fantastic stuff we had leading up to that, and then mm-hmm. suddenly we were handed this, suddenly we're almost running out of crawl suddenly, and it was,
right.
you know.
Yeah, there are some stories that definitely work better than others, I think. Like, that first story I thought was great. The mirror story was really, it was a great introduction too. I mean, she really, actually what was really great about this, the way she wedded the bad guy basically to what was required of the script. Like, here are the things I want to do with, you know, I can see Simone like sort of turning the gears turning and thinking, I need to do these things with her in the first story. So this is the kind of villain that I need, and put the villain in there and go. So, like I said, there were definitely some stories that stumbled. But overall, I was actually pretty impressed with the run.
Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah, one. And then the other thing I read in graphic form was Rat Queens, the first volume of Rat Queens.
I've not read that.
Which is, it is a profane alternative punk D&D. Maybe that's the best way to put it.
Ah.
It's these four female adventurers who are sort of at one level sort of, you know, stereotypical D&D characters. There's like there's the dwarf and there's the, you know, the halfling thief and the human cleric and the elven mage, right? And the dwarf warrior. So there are these four archetypes basically. And they're these just four absolutely, they're not immoral, but they're sort of very creatively moral mercenaries for hire who just, you know, do really, really fascinating things. And it's really funny, when I first saw it, just looking at the cover, I thought, maybe my child will like this. And by the end of like probably the first image, is like, no, my child is not going to see this until she's in high school. No way.
That's funny.
But this is another thing. Like, I was really impressed with this when reading it. You know, it's not deep literature, but it's just really well done. The art really matches well to the story. The dialogue is super snappy. The dialogue is just super snappy, and at the same time, you're seeing all these this sort of like I don't know if I really call it satire, but it's definitely poking fun at fantasy tropes and, you know, D&D adventures and things like that. But there's some remarkable characterization going on at the same time. So I think I had read a tweet of Sam Sykes that mentioned, I was like, what the heck is that? And as if by magic, a week later, someone brought it into our store, so I snatched up to read it. And I was really, it's a lot of fun, and it makes you think sometimes, but mostly it's just a lot of fun, and it's just, like, so well done. I was just really pleasantly surprised by it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good stuff. And that's most of the stuff that I read. I'm going to hold a little bit back for later in the month, too, but those are the big things. And I'm continuing my possibly self-punishing watching of The Flash. I want to like it. I like the lead actor, Graham Gustin. He's so sweet. You just want to, you know, pinch his little superhero cheeks. but the stories aren't good, and the characterization isn't good. And, you know, each week it's like, maybe this week the writers will actually do some writing. No. And then they don't, and then you're sad.
Well, what's the linked show? Arrow.
I also watch Arrow.
I was gonna say, was that problematic during its first season?
No, that was the Arrow has different problems.
Okay.
Arrow is this attempt to like cross noir, grimdark, and soap opera.
Right.
That's what Arrow does. It's like everybody's in love or not in love or loving the wrong person or, you know, rejecting love, and at the same time, they're, you know, having moral quandaries and being grim and gritty and, it's better written than Flash, which has that going for it right there. It's, you know, so I still watch Arrow and Flash, and I like watching Arrow. It's funny, although the latest episode that I've seen, which has someone called Cupid in it, was probably the most disappointing show episode this season. Generally, female characters are written okay in Arrow, and sometimes they're written well. And this was like the episode where they were like, screw it, we're just going to write them like we haven't seen a TV show for 25 years. which was a little disappointing. So in terms of TV, that's pretty much all I'm doing right now is watching those two shows.
Wow.
And Arrow, I still like to watch. It's still entertaining. And The Flash, I mean, I'm kind of on the edge of saying no more, but I keep wanting to. And there, you see them trying to do interesting things. Particularly in the reinterpretation of characters. Like, actually, the best episode of Flash so far has been the Captain Cold episode, where I was stunned to find, you know, a competently done sort of bad guy character who had a little complexity, and who they thought through things like the motivations and stuff for, and actually gave him a really distinctive character. And then we had, like, you know, the high school bully episode, and I was like, how many times have we had the superhero bully, you know, a bully gets superhero powers and goes after a geeky hero thing, and just the cliches pile up at an alarming rate. Yes, for the fastest man alive, even cliches pop up really quick. So, and that's pretty much my culture consumed for this time.
I have been watching, I watched three or four episodes of Constantine. I have not watched the last two. They're still waiting for me. And I've been, it's reeled me in enough that I'll play it out. But since they've already put it on hold at 13 episodes, we'll have to see if they go much farther. One other thing I totally forgot to mention, IDW put out, just finished a book called Super Secret Crisis War, which is effectively a DC style crossover of assorted Cartoon Network properties like Powerpuff Girls and Samurai Jack and Ben 10 and Dexter's Lab and Ed, Edd n Eddy and the assorted villains that go with it. And it was kind of a trippy multiverse crossover brought on by all the villains. And it actually did have crossovers into other books like Cow and Chicken and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. And part of it is a parody of the big event crossovers that DC did with the various versions of various heroes in various worlds. But it's written by Louise Simonson, is why I bring this up. And she put together the story itself is actually good, aside from being funny and keeping to the spirit of all these two network characters. The story itself that they're involved in as comic book multiversal science fictional stories go is actually a very good one, so I do recommend that as well. I think the sixth issue just came out a little while ago.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think that is it for this session. That was good. I now have a lot more stuff to read myself, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's great. So thanks, guys, as always. A pleasure.
Thank you.
Yep.
We'll hopefully be back on track.
Yeah, we're
weeks to come.
We have plans within plans within plans for the weeks to come. Indeed. So everybody have a good morning, evening, afternoon, day, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.